15th chapter, beginning at verse 22. Exodus 15, verse 22, and we'll be working all the way to verse 27. I want to this morning to deal with just this simple topic of those same hands. Those same hands. Now, I'm just going to walk through this story, and as I walk through this story this morning, we'll bring out the points. But here's what I want us to grasp as I'm going through this, is that it is amazing how when we are in this Christian walk or in this Christian life, I said earlier, the hardest thing to do is to receive. The hardest thing to do is just to let God be God in our life. Now that sounds like, Brother Lott, I do that all the time. Most of us don't. Most of us have places where we give our effort and our energy and we complain about how tired we are and we have it all figured out, and when things don't work out the way we thought it should, or somebody doesn't treat us the way we thought they should, or things don't happen, we get frustrated, we get upset. But I want you to realize that the greatest thing I've ever learned, of all the things, if you don't learn anything else from me ever, if you'll learn what I'm going to teach you this morning, this will be the greatest tool ever be in your life. That from the moment I got saved, this has become the pattern by which I have to follow God and I have to work with God. This is always the same. Always the same. Is that I have to realize it is always the same hands. Always the same hands. Let me show you. The children of Israel have just come through an incredible moment. The Red Sea experience. We make movies about Moses and the Ten Commandments, but one of the greatest moments in their existence was when God has brought all these plagues against Egypt and against Pharaoh. He has utterly destroyed, just wiped out, the greatest, most mighty military in the world. He has shown himself to be unlike any other god. He has parted an ocean, literally, parted a Red Sea. And they have walked across on dry land. At the beginning of chapter 15, all you hear is Miriam writing songs and Moses singing and others singing about how awesome God is and how powerful God is. And this is the moment of life that we call that moment by which we were delivered or set free. That moment by which we really got a taste of how awesome God is. It's our place of deliverance in our life. Anybody remember that when you got saved, you got delivered, and God set you free, and you asked for forgiveness, and you felt 10 times better when you left the church and everything about your life? Every one of us that have ever followed God, we've had a moment in our life of deliverance, a moment when we are to share a testimony, a moment we are to say, you know, this used to be my life, but God saved me. This is where I was, but God saved me. This is where our family was, but God put us back together. This was our moment of deliverance in our lives. Every one of us, if you followed God, you've had a moment. Because you came to God for deliverance. You didn't wake up one day and just come to God. It was because you were at a place in your life. A place you couldn't fix. A place you couldn't do anything. A place where the doctor has said something, or somebody has said something, or life is just bottomed out. And all of a sudden, I realize I need God. Maybe it was at a singing. Maybe it was some preacher preaching. But all of a sudden, you heard the gospel. An invitation was given. Somebody, maybe in your family, your mother, your grandmother said, hey, let's pray. It's time for you to give your life to God. You accepted deliverance in your life. The children of Israel have the same story, just like we do. Their existence begins with God coming in after 400 years of bondage. The most mighty and strongest country in the world holds them hostage. They're slaves. They're in bondage to them. And God, with a mighty hand, using one old man, walking around declaring that God says, let my people go, finally breaks the back of this country. And they walk across the Red Sea, and they sing songs, and they talk about how awesome God is. Now, this would be a wonderful ending to the story. Only one problem. There's 3 days later. Notice with me. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. That's our deliverance. That's our moment. It seems like that's where it should end, period. And everybody lived happily ever after. But do you want me to tell you something? Most people miss the fact that life only begins at that moment of your deliverance. Life only begins at the moment when God has delivered you from what He's delivered you from. Your life did not end at that moment. Your life did not just reach a climax at that moment. All God did was get you to a point to where they said, now we can learn to walk together. Now we can learn to do things differently. Now we can learn. It reminds me so much of years ago, flour wasn't as pure as it is now. Now when you get flour, it's soft in the bag and stuff. But years ago when me and my dad used to bake or do anything like that, we had one of those sifters. Anybody ever have a sifter? I mean, it was just a bowl, like a mesh screen. Just a little simple contraption, and you'd turn that little wire on the inside and it would all fall through. But it was, you'd think, oh, this flour's pure. But by the time you got to the end, you found a bunch of clots and clumps and things that looked like little rocks down in there. I mean, you were thinking, this was in the flour. You didn't want to eat that in your cake. And all you did was throw it away. Some of us don't realize that from the moment God delivers us, He begins at that moment the sifting process of our life. It's through one test, one trial, one situation, one circumstance. He tests us to see how we're going to respond, what things we don't know, what things we need to know better, what things we need to learn better, how we learn to walk better. I didn't realize this because when I was young, I thought when I was 8, 10 years old, I gave my life to the Lord. He loved me. I loved Him. I sung all the songs. Jesus loves me. This I know. For the Bible tells me so. That was what I knew about God. But I began to realize that God would not protect me from things. And God did not keep me from everything. And God did not keep bad things from my life. Now I had a confusing understanding of God. If God loves me so much, then why is He letting these things happen? Why is He allowing this stuff in my life? Why do I not smile all the time? Why do I have bad days? How come I've had these catastrophes and moments and had to have stitches and this and that and all the different things that came along with it? It's because the first step in your life is deliverance. But understand, this is always just the first step. The second place is always a place of dryness. Always in your life. It took me years to grasp this, but the next step in your life will be a place of dryness. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and did what? And found absolutely nothing to drink. Now they just walked away from what? A sea. They just walked away from an entire ocean of water. And now for 3 days, all Moses has done is led them into this giant bowl of a desert. And there is no water. There is nothing they can find. They went maybe the first day and thought, well, okay, you know, we'll find something tomorrow. The kids are starting to get a little thirsty. And the cattle, you know, they got water enough for another day. But by the second day, the cows are drinking everything. The goats are drinking everything. There is no bags of water left. We're starting to get running down. Things are not looking good. And we start to say, are we there yet? Or how much further? Well, not much further, not much further. And we keep traveling. But by the third day, you've done got frustrated. It's not funny anymore. And your mind starts to play tricks on you. Something about following God. I can tell where somebody is by the one I talk to them. When somebody is going through moments in their life and they start bringing up what life used to be, I know we're in trouble. When they start talking about, well, you know, I used to do this, and I used to do this. Man, we used to have some good times, and we used to do this, and we used to do that. And I bump them, and I'll just kind of mention, isn't that what God saved you from? Oh, yeah, I'm not saying I want to go back to it. I'm just saying there were some good times in there, too. What happens in dry moments of your life, if you're not careful, is that you start rehearsing the good parts of your bondage. You start rehearsing the good parts of your slavery. You start rehearsing the good parts of the time when you weren't even free. You may have been in bondage. You may have been locked up. You may have been stuck in a bad place. But at least you weren't thirsty. At least you weren't feeling like you were going to die. At least you had something to eat. At least you had something going for you. And in our minds, if we're not careful, we start doing that about our past, about where we used to be in comparison to where we're going now. So many people I meet in my life, this is where they are. They're delivered. They're free. But their mind is always fighting against them because of what good part of what used to be. Of the good part of what life used to hold. In Egypt, there was plenty of water. I mean, think. The place had the Nile River. You had water everywhere. There was no shortage of water. And here we are. We've left the Nile. We've left the Red Sea. We've left everything. I mean, Lord Moses, if you knew anything, you would not have taken us away from all this water. And here we are. We're in a dry place. For 3 days we've searched, and 3 days we've looked, and 3 days we can't find. You know, it's not just outside the church where this happens. George Barna did a study here recently, and here's what he came up with people inside the church. Not outside the church, but people inside the church. He said that if when he gave the questionnaire, here's the way it came out. Percentage of people inside the church that feel stressed out, 31%. The percentage of people inside the church that feel like they need new friends, 50%. The percentage of people that feel like they're too busy, 49%. The percentage of people that feel like they're in too much debt, 40%. Dealing with addiction, 11%. They feel like they have to be self-sufficient. They have to be able to handle their own stuff. They got to be able to pay their own bills. They got to 90%. 90% of the people in the church, you'll hear what I say today, but the fact is you already got a game plan of how you are going to handle your finances, your life, your marriage, your kids, your everything. Searching for purpose. Think about it. Inside a church now, and you're still looking for purpose. 42%. Almost half the people sitting in here still don't know why they're here, what their purpose is. He said that skeptical, we're the people of faith. If anybody ought to be able to look at the news and say, I don't care what they say, that's not my hope. 55% of people inside the church are more skeptical. You see why now when you put all these kind of people inside a church, why it's hard to see miracles and it's hard to see anything? Our mind is on everything. We've been without waters for so long and been in dry places for so long that all of a sudden our minds play tricks on us just like the world's does. We start to think like we need to do something else and we need to have our backup plan and we need to take care of ourselves and we need to do this and we need to do that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll give God 2 or 3 hours this morning. And I mean, it's hard. I've got a lot of stuff I need to do. But I'll give God 2 or 3 hours this morning, but that's it. I've got a lot of stuff I've got to get done. And that's our lives. The third thing is that when we have this mentality, you think God's going to come through. It doesn't work that way. You know what God does to you at this moment? Same thing He does to everybody else. You've got it figured in your mind. You've looked for water. You can't find water. And all of a sudden, you get up over the hill and there's some palm trees. And you're like, oh, finally, we've hit an oasis. Finally, we're somewhere where we can get some water. The only problem is, verse 23, and when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were too bitter to drink. Therefore, the name of it is called Marah. God is going to disappoint you. Look at the person beside you and say, God's going to disappoint you. You know why most people are not in church today? Why most people are not here? It's not because if you met them, I meet them at the Wing Dang Noodle yesterday. If I ask them, do you believe in God? Oh, yeah. Well, I hope to see you in church tomorrow. Well, I ain't going to promise I'm going to be there. Well, you just said you believed in God. But see, you're misunderstanding it, Pastor. I have gone through dry places, and in my dry places, I have faced disappointments in God. I have been disappointed by God. God has not come through the way I wanted Him to. God has not done what I thought He should. God has not answered the way I thought He should have answered. God has not brought the reality that I thought. God has not given me the finances I thought. I mean, I was told if I paid tithes, I knew God would take care of all my bills. I was told if I go to church, then nothing bad would happen. I was told all these things. And guess what? All that I have faced with God is disappointment. That's why 90% of the people in the church that are even here still feel self-sufficient. You still have to take care of yourself. You still have to do that. Why? Because of the disappointment and the letdowns, not by the world, but by the very God that you say you serve. The most of us in this room still at moments have moments where we say, I don't know why He did that. I don't know why He didn't answer that. I don't know why He didn't heal that person. I don't know why He didn't do that. And we settle it into our heart, into our mind, that we just don't get our expectations up with God. No need. Somebody's going to hurt your feelings. So it's best just not to worry about it, not to expect it. Not to expect anything from anybody. Not to expect any extra love or any extra gift or any extra anything. And God teaches the children of Israel. Now notice now, up to right now, everything has been easy. Deliverance was easy. Moses just stuck his stick out. Getting out of Egypt was easy. What did they have to do? Nothing. They sat there while God brought flies, and God brought lice, and God brought frogs, and God brought darkness, and God brought... And they'd sit there like, boy, I'm telling you, God has given them the what for. And when it was time to leave, Moses says, look, God is fixing to deliver you in a big way. And when He does, I want you to go to different people's houses and I want you to borrow stuff from them because you're not going to bring it back. Sounds good to me. Man, that lady I've been working for, I would love to have that scarf she had. So the night before we leave, I go up to her house. I'm like, look, we got a big day tomorrow. Can I borrow that scarf? Sure. And I'm not bringing this thing back. I mean, they basically pillaged Egypt. Loaded down their stuff and said bye. Got to the Red Sea. Gets kind of iffy there. But God comes through again. They get on the other side, watch the chariots floating down, drowned. They're singing songs. Everything up till right now has been no disappointment. We just stand here and wait for God. And God shows up, and God... Do you know there's people that never move past that in their spiritual life? There are people that once they got saved, they thought that's the system by which God works from here on out. The system is like this. God does whatever God wants to do, right? Isn't that right? I mean, God does what God is going to do. Ain't no sense in fasting or praying or doing anything extra because whatever's going to happen, God's already got it pre-planned and it's already designed and you can't change God, so just don't worry about it. So we just show up, sing a few songs, go through our motion, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Children of Israel has that same mentality. They're just like, okay, give us water. And the longer it delays, the madder they get. Why ain't we got water yet? It's like a child. If I got a kid that wants something to drink at home, I'm sitting on the couch. They just come barging in. They're grabbing honey buns or whatever from school. And they look at me, we got anything to drink? I'm like, no, I ain't got anything right yet. But I'll make some tea. Good. They don't slow up eating. They just plop down on the couch. They're steadily chomping, getting thirstier by the minute. They look at me and it's like, you got that tea done yet, Dad? No, hadn't got it yet. A few minutes later, I'm starting to boil it. It's not ready yet. Got the tea ready, Dad? I'm working on it. They don't get it more at ease, do they? Before long, they're just standing in the kitchen, waiting, just kind of watching you fix it. Already get their glass with the ice in it. Works the same way. Some people, from the moment we get saved, we think this is a system. We just ask and keep begging and grumbling and complaining, and sooner or later, God's going to do it. And if He doesn't, it's going to tick me off. God wants to show them immediately this is the system by which we work. I will sift you. There are going to be disappointments in your life. You're going to have things planned in your head that are not going to work the way you think they're going to work. There's going to be setbacks. But I am always standing back watching what is going on. When I think of disappointments, I always think of this story. There was a lady who was a school teacher. And at the end of every school year, you know, kids would always bring a gift. Some of y'all that are school teachers, you get these. And she knew what the parents, I mean, these are kindergarten kind of age kids. And she knew that pretty much whatever the parent did, that was, if the parent was an artist, they'd draw a picture for her and put it in the box. And so the teacher that day was sitting there, and she just loved to play the game with the kids. And so she's sitting there, and the first kid comes up. His dad is a candy store owner. He owns this little candy store. So she shakes the box and hears it rattling. And she said, "I bet I can guess what's in here." He said, "I bet you can't." She said, "I bet there's candy in here." And his face like, "How did you know?" The next little girl come up, her mother ran a florist. And so she shakes it, she knows it's lighter. And she said, "I bet I can guess what's in here." "Oh, no, you can't." She said, "I bet there's flowers in here." "How did you know?" Another little boy come up. He's got a box. His dad owns a liquor store. And she notices that there's some, you know, wetness already kind of coming out of the box. So she shakes the box a little bit, and she takes her fingers, and instinctively she knows, and she said, "I bet I know what this is." He said, "What is it?" "I bet that's a bottle of wine in there." He just smiles and said, "No." So she kind of took her thumb and her finger again and touched that corner of the box. And she said, "Is it champagne?" He just grinned, "No." Finally, she just leaned back. She said, "Well, then tell me what's in here." He smiled, squared his shoulder, and said, "A puppy." She was disappointed. Anybody ever been disappointed? Well, then you know what it's like for the children of Israel, because they got to the water, stuck their head over at the water, put the water in their face, and they went, "Ugh. That's not good water. It's not wine, and it's not champagne." And in life, this is what tests us. This is what God tests us with, is our disappointment. It's not that God has promised something that He's holding out on us, because He's done said, "Look, I'll be with you. I'll walk through these things with you. I will make a way for you." He never promises any, but somehow in our mind, we have it in our mind that He promised He wouldn't let us go through it. He never promised that. Hey, He promised that nothing bad would happen. He never promised that. It's going to rain on you just like a bad person. It's going to be rough on you just like it is everybody else. That part's not in it. It's the fact that He's going to be in the midst of it with you, and wherever you have a need in the midst of whatever it is you're going through, God says, "You won't get yours, but My children will get what they need to get through their situation." And God wants us to learn this. Don't get so disappointed that you think He doesn't care. Don't get so disappointed that you think He's not going to help. Don't get so disappointed that you think He's quit on you. Don't get so disappointed that your mind goes back to the days that
were old and the things that were half bad and half good. But hold on to those things. God says, I'm not holding out on you. You've just got to go through some things to get to where I want you to be. I want you to learn how to handle when the water's bitter. I want you to learn to handle when the doctor says something. I want you to learn to handle when life throws a curve at you. I want you to learn to handle when you're disappointed. That's what separates us from the world. It's when the world watches us go through something and they say, you don't act like we do. What's the deal? I'm not worried. God will come through. I'm not worried. God will make a way. I'm not worried. God will do something. The children of Israel haven't learned this yet. And so now they have to deal with disappointment. Let's read. And when they came to Mar, go to verse 24. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Just like my kids. And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. When he had cast it into the waters were made sweet. And there he made for them a statute and an ordinance. And there he did what? He proved them or tested them. That was the whole point. It was to prove them or to test them at that very moment in their life. Can you handle disappointment? Can you handle discouragement? Can you handle when things don't go the way you want them to go? Can you still believe that I have something good in store for you? The tests in my life have always been the same. God has always tested me in the same way. Until the day I die, He will continue testing me the same way. He will say, Tim, here's where I want you to go. Here's what I want you to do. Here's what I want you to accomplish. Here's what I want you to believe for. Here's what I want you to hold on to. And then he says, now, I'll talk to you later. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, this won't take very long. This won't be too bad. Sometimes God moves quickly. But there are times in my life when God seems to drag His feet continually. This building project is just the last of three that I've done. It's only taken 4 years to get to here. 4 years to start drawing, dreaming, start building. Am I through yet? Nope. Still working on it. He never gave a timeline. Never. He just said, we're going to get there. You just keep believing. Just keep going. One day this will be a youth room. There will be 100 plus kids packed in here every Wednesday night, getting saved, having work. It's going to happen. I don't know when. I don't know the exact time. I don't know. I just know it's going to happen. We'll open a class up where that used to be a youth room. It'll be another class. It'll pack out. I don't know if it'll be a girls' club or a boys' club. I don't know what it'll be. It'll be something up there. Maybe a 20-something class will go to 50 kids. I don't know. I just know God said, that's where we're going. Start walking. Has there been disappointments? On every single side. On every side. But it's not nothing new. We built this building, a sign rotted down in the front yard before we got this one here. The sign rotted and fell over. Future home, Forest Church of God. Termites move faster than we did. I was thinking, come on, God. We can outrun a termite, surely. No. Just hacking away. God said, listen, I want you to learn. I want you to learn something about me. Now listen to what he says. And he cried unto the Lord, and he showed him a tree when he had cast it into the waters, and the waters were made sweet. Here's what you're going to have to learn in this process. Is anybody good at crying in here? I mean, you're good at whining. Good at it. Well, here's the key. Quit whining to your husband, to your wife, to your TV, to learn to whine to God. Only God. Nobody else needs to hear your whining. I don't send a memo every week out about the building to everybody. In fact, far as you know, everything's going along just fine, ain't it? And it is.
May not be as fast, may not be as quick. It's going just fine. No sense in me sending out a letter every week and saying, well, it's not moving as fast as I thought. Love y'all. Pray for me. No.
Moses knew exactly what to do. When they whined to him, he didn't go whining to his wife, and he didn't go whining to his kids, and he didn't go to Aaron's tent and say, Aaron, let's talk, man. Can we hang out together? Or he goes straight to God and says, God, look, you're going to have to do something. Tell me what I need to do. And that's the key, number two. When you whine to God, be ready to do something. It may seem insignificant. It may seem small. It may seem like it's unimportant. But when you whine to God, don't whine to God like you used to when you got saved. Lord, save me. And all of a sudden, you just felt better. This step is a little different. When you whine to God, get ready to do what He's fixing to tell you to do. It may be you need to straighten up. It may be you need to quit talking so much. It may be you need to start praising me more. You need to quit listening to that junk on the radio and start playing my music on the radio. I don't know what He's going to tell you to do. I don't know what He's going to say. You need to quit eating lunch with that other person because all they're doing is dragging you down. You know it and I know it. So why do you keep eating lunch? I don't know what He's going to tell you to do. But whatever it is, it's to make the next step in your life move you forward. For Moses, it was something as dumb as, look, you see that tree limb over there? Yeah, throw it in the water. Moses could have said, what good's that going to do, God? I ain't even going to do that. But Moses walks over, takes the tree, gets a couple guys with him. Guys, help me. What are we doing? I don't know. Doing what God said. And they throw a tree over in the water. In your life, it's as simple as being able to do what God tells you to do. And the waters were made sweet, and they were made for them a statute and ordinance. And notice now, verse 26. Here's the important part of the lesson. And he said, if thou wilt diligently hearken unto my voice, or listen to the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his what? It's a simple process. And keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases on you, which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord. That here's what they learned about God in Egypt. They had learned that God was a mean God. Anybody know God's a mean God? I do. God can put the hurt on you when He wants to. God's brought me down to 155 pounds, crying at night on a milk crate. I know what God can do. God can drag you to the point where ain't nothing left of you. God can be tough. But if that's all I ever see of God, then all I'm ever doing is trying to keep Him from hurting me. And God said, I don't ever want you to see me that way. Here's the way I want you to see me since you're my children. I won't let any of that stuff that I brought on them ever come near you. I won't let any of that ever harm you or touch you. If you will obey me and follow me and rely on me, and just as simple as it is taking that tree limb and throwing it in the water, if you'll just do what I ask you to do, it's that simple. You do that part, I'll always do the rest. Valuable lesson learned in my life. The greatest lesson I ever learned. That deliverance comes right after the moment I learned to do what He's asked me to do. How do you know, Brother Lot? Go with me to verse 27. And they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells. And 70 palm trees. And they encamped there by the waters. Now we always hear of Marah. We act like, oh, they stayed at Marah. God turned the water sweet and they stayed there. No, Marah was a mud hole. Don't ever forget, Marah was a mud hole. It was Elim where God wanted them to be. But to get to Elim, they had to go through Marah. To get to a place where God could pour out all the blessings and all that He wants and all that He could entrust them with, He first had to teach them, can you hear my voice and can you do what I ask you to do? Can you listen to me well enough? Can you trust me good enough? Because Mara is not where I want you to be. I don't want you living from mud hole to mud hole. I want to take you to a place where there's plenty of wells and plenty of water, and Egypt didn't even have water like this. But it all hinges on the fact of, can you trust me? I'll share this story and I'll be through. How I got into ministry. You may have heard it, maybe not. Throughout all my walk with God, this has always been the process. Tim, I'm going to show you something, you do it. That's all I need you to do. That's all I need you to do. If you ask me, well, explain this and explain that. Yesterday we were out in the building and I was trying to explain the balcony. I can't. It's never been the way I walk with God. I looked at Kenneth and I said, now Kenneth, if I built it, I can build it. But I would stick build it. Everything I've ever done is stick build. That building yesterday, that's all stick built. I get one section done and God tells me, now do this. And I get that done, and God says, now do this. God has never given me 10 points ahead. I'm not an engineer. I stick build. My spiritual walk, my life was always taught that way. When I came back from Birmingham, I didn't just come back just to stay. Here was the thing. I done got to 155 pounds and I was fighting with God. God told me, you're supposed to be a preacher. I want you to get to preaching. And I told God, no. Simplest way I could tell Him. I said it more stronger terms at times, but I made it very clear. The answer is no. I'll teach Sunday school. I was helping teach Sunday school from 16 years old. I can do that. I'll be a good member. I'll pay tithes. I'll do everything I'm supposed to do. He said, I want you to preach. I said, no. Nearly 35 pounds later, crying in the middle of the night, I'd get so tired fighting with God that literally I wouldn't sleep very much. I worked two jobs. I worked at Sears in the automotive part, and I worked in a grocery store in the night shift. And I went to school 4 hours every day. But as tired as I was, I didn't have time to think. Anybody ever do that? You just get so busy, you don't have time to think. You don't want to think about what you're supposed to do. You want to just do what you want to do. I remember those days. And there I sat. I remember guys coming to me in the grocery store saying, you won't be here long. I said, yeah, I will. No. I can look at you. You ain't going to be here long. I had a break coming. I had a 4.0 average. Wasn't it I was failing? I had a 4.0, highest in my class. I was coming home for a two-week break before I had to go back to school. I told God on those crate one night, I said, God, I'm tired. Here's what I'll do. I said, you want me to preach? Then find me a place to preach. I said, I'm sick of fighting with you. Just find me a place to preach. The next day, while I was half groggy, and my dad calls me. He said, Tim, I know you're coming home for 2 weeks, you know, from schooling. He said, I want to ask you something. He said, I was at the church and I was just thinking about it. He said, would you speak for me Sunday morning when you come in? I thought, Lord, have mercy. My dad in all his life never asked me to preach. I said, fine. Because I made a deal with God. I'm a deal maker. Fine, God. I made a deal. I'll follow through my end. I got home, got to reading some, studying some. First time I'd opened the Bible in about 6 months. I wasn't in good shape. Only Bible I was getting was my dad was sending cassettes by mail. And I'd listen to them in my car at lunch breaks at night. I asked my dad, I said, tell me how your preaching went. Tell me how everything worked for you, Dad.
He said, "Son, I'll be honest with you." He said, "First time I preached it, I wrote down my notes, did all that." He said, "I got up there about 5 minutes, I was through." So I went to the office and I sat down. I said, "God, I'll make a deal with you." I said, "I'm going to get up there and I'm going to preach." I said, "But if I get up there and make a flop, if I get up there and things don't work and it goes south and I last 5 or 10 minutes, and I said, I'm going back to school and you're going to leave me alone." Felt good about that. I got up that morning, I opened my mouth, 35 minutes later. That's the shortest sermon I think I've ever preached in my life. 35 minutes later, people are coming to an altar. Well, 1 week's down. I got 1 week to go. I told God, I said, "God, I can't live on nothing. You want me to come back and preach and do all this kind of stuff, you're going to have to open some doors." A preacher friend of my dad's called that night. They were just talking, and Dad had told him that I'd preached that day and done what had happened. And he said, "I'll tell you what." He said, "I've been wanting to do something." He said, "Have Tim come up. I want to start a revival with him. Have him come preach for me 2 or 3 nights. I remember driving to Bethany, where my dad one day would pastor later. Me and Trent. Trent rode with me that night all the way back to Bethany. Remember that, Trent? I made one more deal with God that night. I said, "God, look, if I get up here and preach and things don't work out, and things, let me go. Just let me go." Felt good about it. I preached. Nobody came to the altar that night, hardly. Nobody. I thought, finally. God's finally seeing light. My light. He's going to let me go home. One guy came to the altar. One guy. God spoke to me just as clear, just like He always does. "What's next? Do this." He said, "Tim, don't ask that guy what his problem is. Don't try to figure it out. Just lay hands on him and just tell him God is going to heal him. Just lay hands on him." I'm looking him over. I don't know if he's got one leg or one. I'm thinking, "What are you doing?" I laid hands on him. The guy just fell out, praying, speaking in tongues. Scared me to death. About that time, about 15 to 20 people just come bailing out of their chairs and going into the altar. I didn't know it at the moment, but the guy that last week had just had major back surgery, still had stitches in his back. God laid him down like a feather, hands still raised, praising God. He raises himself up, gets up, and goes back and sits in his chair like nothing ever happened. Never pulled a stitch. It scared so many people in that church that night that 11 of them changed their lives. That was 24 years ago. I've never made another deal with God. The process has always been simple. "Tim, if you will do what I ask you to do, and you'll follow my commandments, and you'll trust me, I will keep all that from you. I will heal you." It's that simple. We promise God this: "God, if you'll do this, I'll do better." That's our way. God's way is, "Give me all you got and watch and see if I won't do you better. I'll give you all I got if you will first trust me with all you got." If you're in this place today, it's the only story I have. Didn't come from a book. It's real life. It's built one building after another building. It's grown a church. It's
People ask me all the time, "What's the secret? What's your secret? What's?" And I just smile. The secret's simple. I simply do what God tells me to do next. It's as simple as I know. Sometimes He tells me, call this person. Sometimes He tells me, don't call that person. Sometimes He tells me, pray for this person. Sometimes He says, don't be praying for them. It ain't going to do you no good. Sometimes He tells me to grab a hammer. Sometimes He tells me to go to sleep. He does. Last night I was sitting there at home and I was thinking, I need to go study. And God said, I lay here. The more I lay there, I finally looked over to Lisa and I said, I'm not going back to the church tonight. I got up about 5 this morning, just went into the living room, me and God spending time together. And God said, here, see, I told you this is what I want you to say. It's not hard. This morning, right where you are, once you are saved, the process will never change in your life. The question is only this: what is God speaking to you now? What thing do I need to do better? What act do I need to be better at? What part of me do I need to give more? What if I'm going to whine, then who am I whining to? I don't know where you're at this morning, but I know this. The God that worked there, the God that worked here, is working the same way in you. He's working the same way in everyone in this room. The question is, am I willing to do what I know I'm supposed to do next? Will you stand?